Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 10th of September, Anno Domini 2011, and you, oh, you lucky people. You're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be...
No, wait one minute.
What? Are you even allowed to play that song without paying those two women in Iowa a bucket load of cash?
No comment. Music and lyrics, copyright, XX.
Yeah, right.
Happy birthday, old man.
Thank you. I am old. But we're all old this month.
You're catching up.
We all have birthdays this month. You're this month?
He'll never catch up to me.
No one will ever catch up to you. But we all have birthdays this month.
Yep.
Mine just happens to be today.
And Steve is what?
Next Monday.
Yeah, next Monday. And you're, when are you? You don't even know.
He stopped counting.
2 weeks. I'm on Tuesday, 20th.
He's the 19th. No, you're the
19th.
19th.
Yep.
19th and 20th.
My stepdaughter's is the 16th.
My daughter.
It's because January's so cold.
My
Christmas babies. We're Christmas babies.
But the thing that is, though, nobody got the gift that I did for my first birthday, and I couldn't even return it.
Your brother?
No, my sister.
Oh, your sister.
Kept asking my mother. She goes, "Well, I got you." You know, she kept telling me, "Well, I got you a perfect birthday present, a sister." Where's my truck?
Yeah, right.
Oh, my truck. Get a sister.
I got the perfect gift every year. No brother or sister. I'm an only child.
I'm the oldest of six. My dad is one of 19.
They didn't have television in those days.
No, but my grandmother, God bless her. You know, my grandmother and grandfather, bless their souls. You know,
there's the term long suffering.
That was back in the days, you know. But they hit the farm and everything else,
right.
And you know, I mean, it was a lot of good times. I mean, you know, that's what it's all about is family.
Whenever I really wanted people around me, I'd go down to my aunt's house. They had 10 kids. And I'd enjoy that because I knew at any time I could just leave.
Well, my grandma.
Yep.
Well, with my grandmother, and I mean, this is even after my grandfather passed and he went to other places. My grandmother, the three of us, say we finish the show, you know, at 2:00.
Right.
We could all hop in the car, go down to my grandmother, and she'd sit there. Come on, sit down. What do you want? She'd always have pies, cakes, or something going. She always had coffee on something. You know, everybody was always welcome. Didn't matter what friends you brought in. Yeah. I did that one time with my friend Bruce Stewart and Kurt Johnson, and that we wound up stopping at my grandmother's one time. Oh, let's go. Because Kurt knew my grandmother, too. Yeah, come on. Boom, she was feeding us.
We I think I've told the story before, one time when I was doing a show in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, we were having the party and all this stuff. And I said, I got to go home. I got to go to church. It's Palm Sunday. A bunch of people said, we'll come with you. So two cars full of people, and of course we were in college, so that's about a dozen people, all showed up at my house at 7:00 in the morning. My mother comes to the door, takes a look at us. And we're all in the parking lot because we live right next door to the church. My father was the sexton. And my friends were all going, you know, we really ought to rethink this. I said, nope, it's not going to be a problem. My mother came to the door, and she said, good morning. How many are there? I said, about a dozen of us. She said, okay, come on in. We'll have breakfast. She made breakfast for everybody, bacon, eggs, toast. Some of us went to church. Some of us just crashed on the couch. And when we all came back from church, she had lunch ready for us. She'd gone out to the store and come back with cold cuts and made sandwiches for everybody. Never said a bad word. Half of my friends said, you know, my mother would kill me and all of you. If I did this, I said, no, this is what we do. People show up in our house, we feed them.
That was the way it was with big families.
Yep. We were the only one, but we were an extended family.
Yeah, you know, it's family.
Probably 50 relatives every weekend.
Well, that's what I mean. Bottom line, it was family.
Yep.
You know, and it's with me, it's still same with, you know, my family now. My brothers and sisters and I are very close. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk to each other all the time.
Sometimes too close.
Yeah. And but, you know, my cousins and all that, I mean, you know, it's great.
Yep. Nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
All right, to the news. Microsoft will oh, and you can give us a call, by the way.
Yeah.
585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Microsoft will unveil next month a major revamping of its Hotmail webmail service with upgrades across the board, including in areas like spam, security, and performance. We listened, we learned, we reinvented Hotmail from the ground up, reads an invitation sent on Friday to journalists for press events to be held on October 3rd, simultaneously in New York and San Francisco. Forget everything you thought you knew about Hotmail, just don't forget this date, reads the invitation. Hotmail's two main competitors are Google's Gmail and Yahoo Mail. The last time the consumer webmail market got a competitive jolt was in 2004, when Google surprised the world with Gmail and its then unprecedented amount of email storage. At that point, excuse me, innovation in webmail services had stagnated for years, but Gmail shook Microsoft, Yahoo, and other webmail providers like AOL out of their comfort zone as they quickly responded by increasing the size of their email inboxes. Google, you get about 7 gigs of email in Gmail. Gmail also offered improvements in other areas, most notably with its superior inbox search functionality and with its consolidation of email messages, email exchanges into threaded conversations in which all replies are grouped within the original message. It will be interesting to see if Microsoft is able to deliver in its new version of Hotmail innovations that rock the market and force its competitors to adapt their products. Or I should have said adopt their products. I apologize. It was very late when I wrote that.
Oh, well. Hey.
Or perhaps adapt their products into something else. So our question to you at soundbites.org, the poll of the week, is Microsoft's new Hotmail. And your choices are can't wait, well, that'll be nice, and never going to happen for me. So far, we're looking at 42 votes. Never going to happen for me is in the vast majority, followed distantly by, well, that'll be nice, and two of you can't wait. But, of course, I know you. You will have plenty more to say about Hotmail. So when you are done taking the poll, check the yellow box underneath, click on Give Us Your Opinion, and it will take you to a truly exceptional website where you can enter your opinion on the question, are you a Hotmail user? Do you like it? And our question to you is, what do you think? Give us your thoughts. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And, of course, we don't just want your computer questions. If you have thoughts about Hotmail or Gmail or any of the other email programs, don't hesitate. Give us a call. That's why we're here.
My first thought was, Hotmail still around?
Yeah, well, yes. I certainly won't deny that I kind of thought the same thing. Hotmail has, for a very, very long time, been looked down upon as kind of the slums of email programs, of email
sites. A lot of the sort of the free webmail services, Hotmail and Yahoo Mail and AOL Mail, that was what you learned on, and then you grew up and got a real service.
Yep.
But it's very hard to switch your email address.
Well, it becomes your identity on the internet.
Yep.
You know, and so people like to maintain the same identity. That's why a lot of people, you know, have started now with Gmail. They figure the two that are going to be around forever are really going to be Microsoft and Google.
Yep.
So having an email address on one of those two is certainly a better deal. And Gmail has a better cachet than Hotmail. Hotmail really does seem to be kind of the slum.
A big thing I hear recommended all the time is get your own domain name,
mm-hmm,
of your name, and then you can have mail from that domain forwarded anywhere. So if you're using Hotmail, it goes to there. You can switch to Yahoo, it goes to there. Just, you have your identity is your name.
Right.
And heaven forbid you have a common name. See, and that's what that struck me with the Google Plus, where you cannot use a pseudonym. How do they know my name isn't John Smith? Or what if every one of the 100 million John Smiths want to get an account on Google Plus? What do they do? And I'm sure there's 100 million John A. Smiths and John B. Smiths. And
well, the reason that that's there, of course, is because they want to be able to track real people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole point behind Google+. They want to track real people. And they can't track real people unless they know who you are. So if everybody signs up as Dark Overlord of the Universe, how are you gonna know who that really is? The whole idea being you've got not just who you are and what you're doing, but who you're connected to,
yeah.
who you're talking to, all of that stuff. So, yeah, it becomes a problem for Google and therefore a problem for the rest of us who want to sign up for it. Generally speaking, it seems if you sign up with an already existing Google account that's been around for a while as opposed to I just opened a Google account, now I'm going over to G+. They don't seem to mind. But we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens.
I couldn't remember.
I
couldn't remember what I used for my personal Google Plus account. I can't remember because I know I signed up for
it. Do we want to really know?
I've got my personal account, I've got my company account, and I've got my users group account. So I always have to keep track of which account I'm using where. So I put in I forgot my account, and it's a very interesting CAPTCHA that it gave me.
There is an R in it.
There is an R in it. But
yeah. Oops.
Doesn't quite look like it from the beginning.
Yeah, no. I looked at it and thought, oh, my.
Oh, my. I've gone to that Gmail. I mean, that is just.
I have simply put off, and Jerry Seward, God bless him, has been so patient. Thank you, Jerry. You're a very patient man. Moving my mail over to Gmail, and I need to do it. We need to move the Bean Queen. We need to move Ask Nick. We need to move a bunch of them over because you get 7 gigs of email, and the
it's pushing the, 8 now. I think
it's pushing 8, and the excuse me. I will be doing this all day. My sinuses are killing me. Post nasal drip. Yada,
join
yada,
the crowd.
Yada. So I apologize that I will be frogging up every once in a while.
Like they say, the hand runs. Or the hand is quicker than the eye, but the nose runs.
Exactly. And so consequently, you get so much mail, and the anti-spam filters are so good. And as we said in the news item, messages are threaded.
Mm-hmm.
So when you open up a message, you see the whole thread there instead of having to remember, what did I ask this person?
Yep.
You know, so it's all there for you. And even if you only do, and what I like about it, of course, is because I'm an Android guy, right?
Same here.
I can get Gmail on my phone. I can get it on my tablet. I can get it on a Chromebook. I can get it on my desktops and laptops. I can read my mail anywhere I am, anywhere I want to be. It's always there with specialized software as opposed to having to log into a web interface.
Well, same with me. So I've got like that, my mail. I've got a mail account set up there. And then also, which is key for me because I have CRS, is the calendar.
And yeah.
So different events and everything else going on in that, you know, whether, you know, like I knew today I've got to do stay. It's going to be a long day here for me in the studio because after we finish up here, the clothesline show is going on. Linda won't be here, so I'm filling in for her to do the German show until 4:30. Right. But, you know, it reminds me of these things. And I love that feature. You know, I put in birthdays so I don't miss grandkids' birthdays, you know, and all this other stuff. Or appointments. I just, boom, and it just comes right to the phone. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. And I got the calendar there, too. Another app, Gmail, you know, on the Gmail calendar. Oh, yeah, I got this going and this. Keep up with the stuff. Just like this coming Thursday, which I should put a little we'll kind of do this promo a little ahead of time, then we should. This coming Thursday, for you folks, if you don't know, is the annual Wine and Jazz. And that is going to be
So much fun.
It is going to be at the Water Street Room of Pier 45, and that's located in the old Port of Rochester in Charlotte. Tickets are on sale. They're $25. They're going fast. Folks, the list is very extensive on the different groups that are going to be there. There's going to be silent auctions, all kinds of food, beer, wine tasting, and it's all $25. And like I say, it's coming this coming Thursday. Matter of fact, Rob even gave me Thursday night off. I don't have to do Thursday night show. I'm going to be there dressed up. I actually, you know, other than wearing my jeans and
you will have a shirt with a collar on.
I still might ride the Harley.
Of course you will.
Still ride the bike. If it's going to be a nice night. I mean, I'm on it today.
Right.
But, you know.
Not right now. We hasten to say he did not, in fact, bring it into the studio. Thousands of people rushing to Ustream.
It won't fit through the door.
I know.
It's too wide.
Well, it's because you got a trike.
Yeah, but I can see it outside.
Yep.
But
so can I.
Yeah.
Still there.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I know. Well, not going to lift that thing up. But, the Evening of Wine and Jazz is coming up. It is always a great time. So if you want, you can securely go on the jazz901.org webpage and get tickets. There are still some left. So, you know, you grab them now because it does sell out. It has in the past. And like I say, I'll be there for the evening. And please come by and say hello. Might not recognize me because I actually will have a shirt and tie on.
Not necessarily in that order. The tie may be wrapped around his head like a bandana, but he'll have a tie on.
Do-rag.
There you go. it's a great evening. Lots of beautiful music. Lots of terrific stuff going on.
All the stuff that Laura Lee and the silent auctions and other stuff that's going to be going on. She sent me the list. Folks, you are going to be blown away with the stuff that's going to be there.
It's an elegant and enjoyable evening. You can't go wrong.
I felt so sorry for yesterday because yesterday she gives me a call trying to tell me, what they're doing up for the show and that. And, of course, she's got two little young kids. She goes, "You want some kids?" Yes. I got six grandkids. You know what? It's nice because I can send them back home to their parents.
Right.
But, God bless her. She does such a stellar job.
She really does. It's going to be a great evening, and you should definitely go. And you should give us a call. The number is 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And you can call with a computer question. You can call with just a comment on one of the news items. Or a comment, anything about computers, or dang near anything. We're willing to talk to anybody about anything. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You know, you can, in fact, give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Just like Jim did from New Hampshire. Are you in Nashua?
Yep.
What can we do for you, sir?
I figured you knew who it was.
I was wondering, who's on longer, you or Computer America?
Do I know Computer America? Steve's looking them up now. We may not be the longest running then.
They're nationally syndicated. They're on 5 days a week.
How many years have they been on?
They say they're the longest running, too.
How long have they been on, though?
I'm looking.
I don't know. They said they're the longest running syndicated, nationally syndicated.
Okay,
show.
Syndicated.
Okay, we'll give them that.
Yeah, we can give them that.
But who's been on longer?
Because we got 22 years.
I don't know. And I found them through Going Linux.
Right.
Website, which is for those people who are beginning with Linux. I found them on Miro, however you want to pronounce it. And for people who call you, Nick, wondering whether they can get started on Linux or not, I'd say go to goinglinux.com.
Sure.
Find out a whole lot there.
Perfect. Perfect. Thanks, Jim.
Welcome.
I'm writing it down now.
Do you have a question for us?
No, just those.
Thank you very much, sir.
Perfect. Thanks, Jim.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Very nice.
Near as I can tell from the Wikipedia entry, they started in 2005. So we've got them beat by, 15 years?
Yeah. Yeah, they might be the longest syndicated, but we are the longest running computer show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And
nobody knows about it, apparently.
Well, technically, we're kind of syndicated. We're syndicated on the web. Anybody can tune into us.
That's right.
On the web. So, I mean,
as clearly Jim is doing. He's probably not picking up this signal in New Hampshire.
Well, I mean, we had folks for a while there who were listening to us in China. I mean, you know, our podcast is picked up all over the world by how many folks did you
It's 300 or 400 a week. Let me You go ahead and talk.
It was talk about syndication. Yeah, you can be on 5 days a week and all that other stuff. But it's like some of these shows, though, what people don't understand is that we are here, we're live, we take the questions live. There's no screening or anything else. You know, if you do swear, of course, I got the dump button ready. But, you know, we answer your questions live. It's not one of these in which a lot of them do, just so you folks understand. A lot of these shows that do this type of stuff, and I know a couple car ones and that do it, they'll call you and say, all right, you called our show and you hit a question. What's your question? Well, tell you what, we're going to call you back next week, and we'll answer that question on air.
After we look up the answer and
figure out
the
whole problem. Yeah, and they take the time and figure it all out. No, we've been doing it 22 years here live and without a net. And there's been a couple times.
The truth.
We've been, sitting there and had to turn around and tell you folks, I'll tell you what, let us get back to you. We couldn't quite get the full answer. But we do post it on our webpage. Anything that we recommend, there's always links there that if we recommend something or our listener, and that's like you said, Nick, countless times, that's a great thing about our show. Our listeners will also call in and suggest this, that, or whatever. And we go, oh, cool. We put that link in there too.
Yep. We get well over 300 a week. It depends on the week.
Yep.
We get them lots and lots of net.net, .com, .edu. A lot of people from the UK, Russia, Finland, Germany, Austria, Sweden. Well, only three from Sweden, but still. You folks need to call in. You need to let us know that you're enjoying this show.
Sam got this one email, and evidently it's going around, just so you folks know. It's supposedly from the New York Department of Treasury. And it's got Jerry Lewis, I think, is his name. Jerry Lewiston is the sheriff, his name. And, you know, to avoid taxes and collection agencies and all that, you got to look at this, respond to this email. And I took a look at it, and Sam goes, look at this. I went right up and looked at the URL. .pl.
Yeah.
She goes, what's that? I go, Poland.
And that's a lot of times you can figure out it's not a valid URL. A valid URL. It's not a valid email. A lot of times most of the stuff will come from overseas, and so English isn't their first language, and so there's going to be awkward grammar and spelling mistakes, although you can get that from good old American sources too.
Yes, you can.
But there's a lot of fake anti-malware messages pop up, and every time there's a national disaster, we talked a few weeks ago about the fake donate to Irene cleanup recovery organizations that were popping up and soliciting money. The bad guys take every advantage they can whenever something happens.
Yep. All right, our next caller is Joanne from Greece, New York. Welcome, Joanne. What's your question?
I'm almost ready to jump into the Apple iPad.
Yeah.
But I want to know, the new one, is it, should I buy that now or should I wait for a...
Why don't you wait until the Christmas? I mean, just
well, there's always a better one coming.
Yeah.
But
but the holiday season, I mean, is just around the corner.
So they usually have sales then?
Yeah. No, they don't go on sale, but there's rumors that there's another model coming before Christmas.
Which should lower the iPad 2, right?
Right, the iPad 2 price may go down as the iPad 3 comes out. We still have some iPad 1s on sale that were replaced by the iPad 2.
And the Android tablets are coming out. What we've been reporting on that, that's going to be between the $300 and $200 price range.
Right.
Android system, which is fantastic.
The deal, Joanne, is, you know, as long as you're this close to Christmas, you might as well wait and see what happens.
Okay.
But in general, jump in whenever you jump in. There's always something new coming along, and if you never jump in, you never jump in. So
most companies have their Christmas lineups at least by September.
Steve, what have you heard so far, though, as far as the new iPad 3, though?
There's a lot of rumors flying around, higher resolution screen, higher resolution cameras, greater storage capacity. There's rumors that it's going to use a standard USB connector instead of the docking connector, which will then not work on any of the millions of devices that are designed for the docking connector. But you never know what's going to actually come out. There's probably dozens of prototypes running around inside of Apple, and that's what a lot of the rumors are based on, is, you know, whatever they think they might try to add, they may be trying somewhere, but what actually comes to market is the question.
Okay. Right. The Android tablets, are they better than the iPad? Or
well, they're different.
Just different.
Better is so subjective.
It's Ford versus Chevy.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Good analogy. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know what? My suggestion is go look at both.
Okay.
Go take a look at them. Go play with them. One thing about Android tablets is they're often less expensive. Mm-hmm. Not always. Sometimes they actually cost more. Amazon is supposed to come out with one that's a new version of their Kindle. That's mm-hmm. also an Android tablet at a very low cost, because it's going to be a loss leader. They'll charge less than it costs to make, because they'll hope you'll buy books and stuff.
Okay.
But the thing that makes the iPad such a buy is a lot less about the hardware and a whole lot more about the ecosystem. If you know, you can buy movies, you can buy books, you can buy music. There's lots of apps to download. The same is true of an Android tablet, and the same will be true of the Amazon tablet. It's just different sources for those things.
So, Walmart versus Kmart, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So you'll find most of the same stuff. Maybe one's a buck more, one's a buck less. You know, that's sort of fair. But really, the best thing to do is to try a few out, pick a platform, and be happy with your choice.
One of the nice things with the iPad is that you can buy books and music and movies from almost all of the other stores, too.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Android tablets, you can get the Nook reader, you can get the Amazon reader, you can get the Google reader, and the same thing with the iPad. So you can pretty much buy anything from any store on the tablets as well. So it's you're not locked into that ecosystem from Apple, but they do make it really easy.
Right.
So can it operate similar to your laptop? You can type on it and
yeah, you can
things?
You can.
Well, you can. I would not necessarily recommend it.
It comes with what we call an on-screen keyboard. When you mm-hmm. want to type something, a keyboard pops up on screen and you can type on it.
Okay.
People that do a lot of typing can get a real physical keyboard, and there's a lot of iPad cases that have keyboards built into the case. You can use a standalone Bluetooth keyboard,
mm-hmm.
and it basically turns it into what we call the netbook for years
right.
now.
For if what you're doing is a little bit of email, typing in web addresses, things like that, it's fine.
Okay.
You're really not going to write the next great American novel on it.
So I can put some stuff I have stored in Word, I can put it in there, though.
You'll need to buy a product like the iWorks.
Right, Apple Pages or DataViz, Documents to Go. There's dozens of different word processors on the iPad, and many of them can read Microsoft Word format.
Okay.
But Microsoft themselves don't have an app.
They
don't have a Word app for the iPad or for Android or for any of the other tablets.
Well, I have to check on what I can get with the one I picked, if it'll pick up my...
Well, you would buy the app that lets you do that. So, for example, from Apple, there's Pages for word processing and Keynote for PowerPoint presentations and Numbers for... Excel spreadsheets, you know, spreadsheets.
Yeah. Now, would my Excel spreadsheets carry over into that Numbers?
Many of them. Okay. If they're not horribly, horribly complex.
Yeah, no, mine aren't.
Right. And the same thing with your Word documents. If they're not horribly complex, Pages will read them. If they're not horribly complex, your spreadsheets can be read by Numbers. Now, again, and believe me, I've had extensive testing with all of these on every one of these platforms. Using the on-screen keyboard and trying to write a document or, worse, create a spreadsheet is not terribly good. But you can certainly read them and make small adjustments.
Okay. That'd be good.
You know, I'm trying not to oversell it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can view Word, Excel, PowerPoint files without buying anything. But if you actually want to edit them, then you need to buy a program.
And Pages and Numbers are only $9.99 each, $10.
My sister wound up getting an iPad, and I was playing with that this past week. That's a lot of fun.
a lot of the pundits in the Mac community talk about there's the iPad and there's everything else, and iPad has sort of become the name in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And so every other tablet company that comes out, they have to differentiate themselves. Why wouldn't I just get an iPad?
Yeah.
And for the Motorola Zoom, it pretty much failed. The HP TouchPad pretty much failed. The Galaxy Tab pretty much failed. They have their small loyal following, but Apple still has 98% of the market
of the tablet market.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the biggest thing a lot of the people are wondering about and talking about is the Amazon tablet, because Amazon is poised, because they have the store already set up. Their Amazon Kindle tablet could be a serious contender in form, feature, functionality, and if the price, the rumors about the price of $250 is right, then that becomes the why not buy an iPad because the Kindle's cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we'll see. We have not seen one yet. No one has. We're not quite sure when it'll really be out. Everybody's assuming Christmas. Nobody knows. But certainly, you know, you're close enough to Christmas that unless you have an actual need for it, wait and see what happens.
Okay, I might do that.
You know?
Just do some more exploring.
Yeah, you're going to be the winner on that one.
Are they in other stores, or are they? I saw them in the AT&T stores. But
well,
are they in other places too?
Yeah, they're at all the major electronics resellers.
Okay.
Even Walmart, Target have them. We have them at Mac Ave, the store I work at. There's two different classes of them. There's Wi-Fi only models that connect to the internet over your Wi-Fi network at home or a hotspot at a coffee shop or bookstore. And then there's 3G models that you can get from Verizon or AT&T. And they actually have a cell phone inside of the iPad, so you can get on the internet over the cell phone when you're not near Wi-Fi.
You need to buy...
Right. They cost more to get the 3G version, and you have to buy a data plan to get data on the internet. So that's what you saw at the AT&T store was the AT&T 3G version.
Yes, I did.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, the regular Wi-Fi only iPad starts at $499.
Oh, heavens. That was a lot less than the other one. That was like 800 and something.
All right, Joanne, we got to go.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 38 minutes after the hour, and we apparently continue to be the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbite, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Samsung, speaking of the Galaxy Tab, Samsung must not sell the Galaxy Tab 10.1 in Germany because it looks too much like Apple's iPad 2. The district court in Dusseldorf ruled on Friday. In addition, Samsung Germany may not sell the device in any other European Union country, although other Samsung divisions may sell into those countries, a spokesman at the court said. Samsung will appeal the decision in the Dusseldorf Higher Regional Court, a spokesman said. We are disappointed with this ruling and believe it severely limits consumer choice in Germany, he said via email. Apple had filed a lawsuit, catch this, claiming that the Galaxy Tab 10.1 infringes on the design of the iPad 2, which is registered with the EU's Office for Harmonization in the Internal Market. By imposing an injunction based on this very generic design right, this ruling restricts design innovation and progress in the industry, the Samsung spokes individual said, adding that the decision is inconsistent with the August 24th ruling by a Dutch court with intelligent people on the board on a separate case involving the two companies, which found the designs of Samsung's Galaxy products don't violate Apple's design copyright. In the German case, Apple was granted a preliminary injunction about a month ago preventing Samsung from selling the tablet in all EU countries except the Netherlands, where a separate case is still pending. A week later, the ban was lifted in all countries except Germany because the court wasn't sure it had the authority to stop a South Korean company from selling its products outside Germany. On August 25th, the injunction was upheld following a hearing that focused on the accuracy of evidence supplied by Apple, with Samsung accusing Apple of deliberately distorting images of the Galaxy Tab 10.1 so that it looked more like the iPad 2. Earlier, an investigation by IDG publication Webworld showed that at least one of the Galaxy Tab pictures that Apple provided as evidence in the case was wrong or had been manipulated. This is basically, I don't know, did Germany make the right decision? Give us your thoughts. 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. I got to be honest, go take a look at what a Galaxy Tab looks like, and then go take a look at an iPad, and tell me there's an infringement. Yes, they both have glass on the front. Yes, they both have connectors on them, but they're not the same connectors in the same place. There's no external button like there is on the iPad. On the Galaxy Tab, there's no button like there is in the iPad on the front.
What do you do, touch
the
screen?
No, there's a thing on the side.
Oh.
One of the big issues is, isn't the Tab a 16:9 ratio, and the iPad's a 4:3 ratio?
Yeah, it's an entirely different ratio.
In the pictures that Apple submitted, they looked identical. Yeah.
They did manipulate the image, and that's what they've been saying. It's just, I'm sorry, but this is another one of those cases where you think, really, Apple? Really? I mean, obviously you can't innovate, so now you're going to litigate? I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
Well, the big thing, it sort of points to a problem in the copyright and patent community that, If you make something and somebody copies it, you want to have recourse to fight against them. So, but how close a copy counts, and so that's what the courts are deciding. So we've all heard stories about Kleenex facial tissues, where companies will lose their copyright because their word becomes so synonymous with the thing that they can't hold the copyright anymore. And companies are afraid to innovate because they don't want the knockoff companies to copy it too closely. But it's tricky when you have to enforce your copyright in every country. That's what the EU was supposed to help do. Have one unified European government, but still every country has its own autonomy. And what was interesting is Apple won a permanent injunction, and most of the analysts are saying, what?
Yeah. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. It really is ridiculous. I'm very, very disappointed in Apple. I really am. You would think they'd be...
German court system.
I say this over and over and over again. I expect Apple to be better than this. I expect them to own the marketplace by innovating, not by litigating. I expect them to move ahead and not worry about what's behind them. But apparently they're not any better than I think they are. And so they disappoint me. This is really a dumb and stupid ruling by the German government. Yes, I said it's dumb and stupid. And I'm not impressed. I think it's bad jurisprudence, and I'm not impressed.
We've seen issues like that in the American court system too, where the judges appear to make I guess I can say stupid ruling.
Stupid.
And a lot of the times it's judges are usually older because you have to work your way up through the system. They may not be that technologically skilled or knowledgeable. And it becomes difficult to judge something when you don't know. So to a casual glance, yeah, they look close enough. So I guess these guys were right.
Yeah,
but
I suppose
when you look at the details, no. And
that's the trouble. Too often, folks, just like what we say when they go to install programs, they just get click happy.
Click, click,
click, click, click, click, click. They don't really take a chance or the time.
Right.
They got to slow down a little bit. Look, like you say, take the time to look those two over to make a fair assessment. Then just a quick, oh, yeah, yeah. And the same with installing programs. They sit there and install stuff. I had a client last week. Installed a bunch of stuff. They go, well, I was only installing this program. Well, yeah, and they also said that they were going to put those other three programs. We were going to put all these other toolbars on your browser because they were upset because all of a sudden now there's Google and all these other additional toolbars onto their web browser.
I hate those things.
Yep. Yeah, Yahoo, I think it was, and then the Ask. I mean, it's like whoa, and they go, well, yeah, I was installing. And you got to take the time. It says, is it okay to install this? You can check it and say no or uncheck it.
And you get so many toolbars installed, you lose all of your browsing space.
Yeah, you lose so much. Well, that's what they were complaining. The area is so small, I can't see as much. Well, you had all these frapping toolbars on there, you know, and that.
And,
it's
easy to install, but really hard to uninstall.
Yeah.
Well, that's where, again, we keep telling folks week after week, the Revo Uninstaller. Can't recommend that program enough because, unlike most of the installers, for you folks that don't know, Revo Uninstaller, literally Microsoft, all it'll do is maybe clean out the directory, possibly. It doesn't even totally delete the folder. But the one thing that can really slow down your machine, not necessarily the space, but it's the size of your registry. See, every time you start up Windows, it's got to go through there and read the registry. So it knows where things are and everything else. What you've got installed, what you don't have installed. Well, say I install and uninstall, say, a program 6 times. Well, you know, and it's finally, you think, gone. Well, you could go back in there if you did, you know, which I don't recommend. I'm not recommending this at all, to go into the registry and do look for it, and you can find the 6 times that that program was installed. But even though it's not there, it still gets got to be scanned, which slows down your machine. Well, when you use Revo Uninstaller, what it does is it not only gets rid of the folders out on the hard drive, but it goes into the registry and removes all incidences of that particular program, no matter how many times it's been installed and uninstalled. Well, if you're using it, it'll only do the one time. And it cleans it out. So it keeps the registry a lot trimmer and running smoother for you. And it'll help literally speed the machine up at times. Right, so like I say, one part, Revo Uninstaller. We've got a link off of our webpage, I know, for it. It's been recommended a number of times. So give it a shot, a shot to get it on your computer and try it out a few times instead of using the Microsoft Uninstaller.
Which Revo will call so that the Microsoft programs know how it uninstalls, mm-hmm. and then it goes back in and, oh, let's check the registry and let's check the files.
Yep.
And
yeah, it does a fantastic job. Because Microsoft just turns one bit off and it says, well, that's gone. Yeah, it's gone, but it's not because it's gone from the menus, but it's still there taking up space in your registry and yep. slowing things down.
Yep, the registry is a very bad idea. I have said this from day one. I like the way Linux does it, where you've got a set of files that are the configuration files for each individual program. And that's one of the things that makes Linux so much faster than Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having to read what could be a multi-gig file and then finding your place in it, you just read one tiny file off the drive. Boom, done. Here's my stuff. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
You always know where it is. You always know how to work it. You can back it up if you want to. And you can, you know, if you remove the program, it removes itself. Or if you find it there later, you can remove it. But it doesn't take up a lot of space, and nothing else is bothered by it.
Well, you're not looking for stuff that you really don't want. You know, if you're looking up, say, for spreadsheets, it doesn't have to go through and then also scan through and see, oh, your song library and your picture library and all this other stuff, which literally the registry is doing.
Right.
Especially if you like to install programs. You know, oh, that's neat. Let's try that. Oh, mm-hmm. that's neat. Let's try that. And then you don't like it and uninstall it. You end up with a lot of cruft.
Yeah, our suggestion is when you buy a new machine, the very, very, very first thing you install is Revo Uninstaller.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably is going to keep you, well, and nothing is going to keep your machine super clean because, let's face it, it's Windows and it has a registry. But it'll keep it cleaner than most other things.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You got, once you get them on there, again, we're seeing a lot of rootkit errors. That, you know, I've got to bring the machine back into the shop and get rid of everything. And I had a client just today that picked up their machine. And they get upset, but they have like 3 and 4 identities. So now I got to go through and clean out each one of those. And, you know, that takes time. You know, and it's like, well, why is this? Hello, all 4 users or even 2 users, you know, whatever it would take for one, now you got to double that.
Which we recommend you have multiple users. Give your wife and kids, especially mm-hmm. your kids, their own account so they don't accidentally delete your stuff. But that's, you have to scan them all.
You still got to take the time to do it and clean them all out. I mean, it's just a fact of life. And, oh, you're getting frustrated. Don't go on the internet.
Yeah, right.
You won't get infected.
We've said the safest...
Don't walk down dark alleys with $20 bills hanging out of your pocket, yeah. And you won't get mugged.
Exactly.
The safest way to... the best way to keep your computer safe...
don't turn it on.
Sink it in a block of concrete and dump it in the ocean. I guarantee you it will not get infected.
Or don't turn it on.
Yep.
Sit there and stare at it.
It's a reality of life that you could get hit. The best thing you can do is keep your machine as clean as possible. Dance the security tango. Be careful where you go. Remember that Windows is a huge target, and within that, Internet Explorer is a gigantic target. So don't use Internet Explorer at the least. If you cannot use Windows, that's even better.
Mm-hmm.
But you can still, Mac people and Linux people, stop smiling smugly and nodding. You too can get viruses. Get over yourselves. They're out there. They're in the wild.
Read messages that pop up closely.
Yep. Well, like I say, that one Sam got. Look at the name, folks, but if you take the time and look at the full URL, and if it's, you know, and what I mean by URL is it's the last end of it, it'll say dot. In this case, this email said PL. So you can do a Google search on .pl. Oh, gee, it says everything's coming from Poland.
Or top-level domain, TLD.
Yep.
The top-level domain, perversely, is the last piece of the URL. So .com, .pl, .de, whatever, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a list of those out on the Internet.
And I've seen sneaky ones that will be like paypal.com.ru. Well, it says paypal.com. Yeah, but you didn't read the rest of it.
Right. What is that? We seem to be getting some form of...
That's a fire alarm.
Fire alarm. Well, that's interesting.
Well...
Yeah, are you doing anything out there, man? My son's out in the other room. Playing on the iPad. Is it going off out there? We should evacuate the building.
No.
Well, that's interesting.
I'll go check in a minute.
Rob, are you listening?
Yeah, Rob, if you're listening, there's a fire alarm going off. This may be our last broadcast.
And it's coming up to the top of the hour break.
And it is coming up to the top of the hour break, so we'll take a look around once we do take a break, but we're not quite there yet. Wow, what were we just talking about? That
fake URLs.
Right out of my head. Oh, yeah. So if you go, there are lists of top-level domains on the Internet, and you should download one, keep it handy. And when you see something, as we were saying, that says, you know, paypal.com.au, well, that's actually in Australia. Might be legitimate, might not, but the reality is unless you're actually going to...
The phone
was blinking there for a moment. Yeah, now the phone is ringing. And we'll see what happens there. Maybe that's Rob telling us to get out of the studio.
Yeah.
We don't know quite what's going on here.
And a lot of the malicious websites are coming from former Soviet bloc. So you'll see things from China, from Poland, from Russia. You know, Poland is PL, Russia's RU. CH is Switzerland, though, because it's the Swiss name for Switzerland.
Right.
So what's China? CN, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
CN. But then some people try to get sneaky. There's .TV, so you see a lot of TV shows will be something .TV. Well, that's the island of Tuvalu. But
anybody can get a URL there.
Yeah, it sounds cool.
Right. So you want to be fairly careful of where you're going on the Internet. Check, particularly an email, check where you're about to click to. That's awfully important. I get a lot of stuff from PayPal. I got one today that looked legit, but of course I checked and it was going to some place in the middle of one of the former Soviet countries, and I was fairly sure that wasn't PayPal. We're going to take a slightly longer break while we figure out exactly why we're having this problem, and we'll be back hopefully in just a few minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is Soundbite, and we are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. And I think I feel good about this next story. Light Squared and Dish Network have proposals out to use the satellite spectrum for 4G networks. Now, they aren't necessarily competing for FCC approval, but either one could make the U.S. mobile broadband business more competitive if it clears significant hurdles. While LightSquared lobbied for its network against fears of interference with GPS, Dish last month came up with a plan that is similar in some ways, though without the interference problems. Both face significant build-out costs and a cloudy profit outlook. Both companies want permission to use the MMS, or Mobile Satellite Services Band, for land-based mobile data networks without being required to offer a hybrid service with specialized devices to all customers. For this, they need waivers from the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, which originally set aside the MSS band for satellite services that would not use terrestrial networks except to get around the blocking of satellite signals by buildings and urban environments. The waivers could help the FCC meet its goal of providing more radio spectrum for mobile broadband and making more high-speed internet access available to residents of rural areas. The new LTE, long-term evolution entrance, would also serve its goal of increasing competition in the mobile market. With expensive handsets and service plans and relatively slow connections, satellite hasn't proved broadly popular as a consumer mobile technology. LightSquared and Dish both want to transform satellite companies into cellular operators while keeping satellite available as a separate or bundled service. LightSquared plans to only provide its services at wholesale to other carriers, while Dish is interested in selling its own customer services. The companies come at the proposition from dramatically different places. LightSquared was formed last year by Harbinger Capital Partners, which acquired satellite phone provider SkyTerra without any former telecommunications experience. Dish Network, on the other hand, is a satellite TV provider founded in 1996 that also resells voice and data services and claims 14 million customers nationwide. It gained access to the 2 gigahertz spectrum by acquiring the bankrupt satellite companies TerraStar and DBSD at auction earlier this year. Dish plans to take advantage of its national sales, support, and maintenance infrastructure to deliver its mobile service, and the 4G network it provides is likely to become part of its broader set of offerings. Dish also plans to use a faster and more advanced technology than LightSquared's, which is called LTE Advanced, and it wouldn't have its network up and running until later. LightSquared plans to offer services next year, while LTE Advanced is not expected to be available until 2013. Sound like something you'd be interested in? Give us your thoughts. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. I'm personally kind of interested in this. If I've often said, if you can get the LTE, the 4G LTE sort of speeds more ubiquitously and hopefully at a cheaper cost than you can get them from the current phone companies, particularly if it's an all-you-can-eat plan rather than a pay-as-you-go data plan, I think it'll just open up the world to a whole lot of things. And if you can pay a set and low price a month, they can start adding this service into many, many more devices and then bringing about the kind of freer walk-around ability that you now get with just a cell phone or, as we've talked about, getting a device that you have to pay an extra data plan for.
And with satellite coverage, it's a wider coverage area. So rural America that is typically still stuck on dial-up will have better coverage. The issue has been the range of the signal. There's cell towers every, what, mile? Every 2 miles?
Sometimes half a mile.
Sometimes half a mile. And even in an airplane, you know, airplanes are 5 miles up, maybe. Satellites are hundreds of miles, if not thousands of miles up. Right. So you need a much stronger signal in order to get that distance out of it.
But if they can,
and a bigger antenna at the receiving end to pick it up.
Right, but if they can create a hybrid system that involves cell towers on the ground that talk to the satellites directly, they've got a huge advantage over pretty much everybody else.
Yeah, that's still building towers on the ground, which is a slow and costly proposition.
Which may be why it's not going to be available till 2013. But they've got to feel that they've got a shot at that, and particularly if they're going to sell their service to other companies. So what that would then mean is somebody like Motorola, who's already using LTE, doesn't have to build more towers. They can lease time on these other towers. So there's some pretty interesting possibilities there, actually. It should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, and hopefully it will result in more competition, which could result in lower pricing.
Well, that's the thing we're missing, really. In the industry at the moment, the thing we're missing is that kind of price-lowering competition.
We're reading every week about cell phone companies raising their prices, dropping the unlimited plans. There was one a couple of weeks ago about AT&T is dropping their $20 a month text plan, so you have to move up to the $50 a month text plan if you're going to send more than a few dozen texts. So it's very frustrating. Although I did read about the coolest thing. Somebody figured out how to send a web page via a text message. And it does it inexpensively over the text messaging system. Oh, that's where I heard about it.
Yeah. It's actually one of our news stories.
I read so many blogs, I don't remember where I heard about everything. Did I hear about it first?
I don't know. But we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it shortly. And that was not a fireman.
It was
a uniformed officer.
It was a uniformed gentleman. I don't know if he's an officer. He seemed to just be the UPS guy. So.
No, he was
USPS.
One of the folks for the.
Then he probably is some sort of officer.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a gentleman that is contributing stuff to the upcoming Wine and Jazz.
Oh, how nice!
Had to drop some stuff off.
So he's none of those other things.
Correct.
He may be an officer and a gentleman.
I could have sworn I saw a postal emblem on his shirt.
Maybe he is.
Yeah.
He may well be a postal employee who's also contributing to the Wine and Jazz thing.
Wears a couple different hats.
Sure. And why not?
Like so many of us.
Yeah.
Not necessarily simultaneously.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
That's a fashion faux pas. That's your basic fashion don't. Oh, there we go.
Yep. The alarm stopped. That's either a good thing or a really bad thing.
It's been distracting me. I'm sure it was very noticeable.
Well, I'm sitting here. And it keeps flashing, and I'm catching it out of the corner of my eyes. I'm trying to focus on the board.
Right. But apparently the emergency is over, ladies and gentlemen. So those of you who've been rushing down here to save us from the conflagration, you can slow down now. You can relax because the conflagration apparently is over. So I want to thank all of those of you who were rushing to save us from the inferno, the towering inferno, as we sat here on the first floor.
Still doing radio.
At our posts.
Yes. Not vacating.
If only we had a recording of Nearer My God to Thee, we'd have certainly played it while we were talking.
Look on the list.
Maybe I'm sure it's in there somewhere.
Maybe there's a jazz version of it.
But in the meantime, nice. I can sing it if you like. I'm nearer, my God, to thee, nearer to thee.
Hey, I don't think that's it. I had to bring in Happy Birthday.
I know. I get it. We're going to go back to the phones, and we're going to talk to our friend Smiley from Rochester, New York. Hi, Smiley. What's up?
Okay. We got a thing going on, a chat thing here. Vince, he sent you an email and so forth. You didn't answer it. He wants to know if you can transfer, the podcast, I guess, or something to... You can read through this thing on the chat, I guess.
To Zune Marketplace.
You want the podcast
Yeah, I thought I answered him. I am looking into it. It is certainly not an impossibility to add it. Thank you, Vince. I apologize if I didn't actually answer your email. I've been looking into it. It's doable. I just have to sign up and do all this other stuff to make it happen. But, in fact, I may turn that over to Steve since he's already doing the other one to the other way. So.
I don't know if he can hear us or not, so maybe you ought to type something in on the chat and so forth.
Well, that'll wait until the commercial if nobody else is going to type it in for me.
We've been conversing back and forth. I don't know if you can see what's going on in there.
I can. The problem is I can't. Hey, we for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, we have a chat going, an IRC chat going on FNET, E-F-N-E-T, in the Octothorpe Soundbites room. The problem is I can't do the show and type stuff up and watch the IRC chat all at the same time.
And they wanted me to watch some of the other stuff, and I said,
yeah. I'm old now, so oddly I can't do three things at once.
Wait a minute, Nick. Now I met you. Yeah. I know you're an octopus. You got about eight arms.
I got about
you
eight arms, but seven of them just lie there idle while one is doing something.
That's what his girlfriend says.
Yeah.
All three of you know me. I've met you at different places.
Yes, you have.
Yep.
In fact, I've come over to RIT, Nick, when you first started with Ubuntu, when they were moving everything and that, and I was bringing you CDs and everything and that.
Yep, I absolutely remember.
All right. I'm going to hang up and let you go.
Thank you, my friend.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yes, Vince appears to be our one listener who actually is using a Zune. God bless you.
Well, and apparently to add a podcast to the Zune marketplace, you have to have Windows, you have to have the Zune software, and you have to have a Windows Live login. So that eliminates
right.
Nick and I.
I actually have a Windows Live login.
Yeah.
So one out of three I got. The problem is setting up. I have to set up a Windows machine and that stuff. So I am working on it, Vince.
It's
not something I can easily do because I don't have a Windows machine.
Well, tell you what. Take today off since it is your birthday and then get on stick.
Thank you. Thank you. I may take the.
We'll give you today off because it is your birthday.
Yeah.
I want to remind folks that tuned in late. Yeah. It is Nick's birthday. And how young are you?
I am proud of that. What year is it? 2011. Okay, I'm 61 years old.
Holy
what?
Cow, you're old.
I'm 61 years old.
What year were you born?
1950. I can do the math.
I didn't think I was that much older than you two. Well, Steve, shoot, I got socks older than him, along with
you're wearing underwear older than him.
Probably.
You're old, though.
Yeah.
You're what, 64? You're about to be 65? No.
Please. I'll be 63.
63, that's right. You're 2 years
older. I'm 2 years older than you. Wow.
That's right. Well, you look so much older. That's the thing. Yeah. There were several times in my life when...
Luckily, the camera's
Yeah, exactly. There were several times in my life when I was told, you're getting to the end, son. So when I'm able to stand up and say out loud, I am 61 years old and look down and see dirt down... then I'm a happy man. I don't care. I'm never going to lie about my age.
Well, that's one thing. You know, I had to go to U of R this week to get my final word. And I walked in there, and the young lady that I saw for over 9 weeks said, oh, Dave, how you doing? And I just turned to her. I says, well, I'm this side of the dirt. One guy I thought was going to pee his pants.
Yeah.
He said, what a good outlook. I go, well, it's better to be looking down in the flowers than looking up at the roots.
That's exactly right. The roots, God did not make the pretty part underground.
And they go, what week are you on? I says, I'm all done. Oh, congrats. And they're like, wow. So, it's all on how you look at things. Half full or half empty.
That's right.
What don't kill you makes you stronger, as my grandfather used to always say.
The optimist says the glass is half full. The pessimist says it's half empty. The engineer says the glass is badly designed. So,
I like that one. Yeah.
Oh, and it's over designed for the volume required.
Exactly right. So I am 61 years old and proud of every.
And Steve, how old do you turn?
Who put an entertainment center next to the waste processing facility?
What?
No.
I can't hear that.
I don't remember. I got to do the math.
How old are you going to be?
What year were you born?
64. So that's 46, 47? I gave up counting.
Wow. I'm 61 and I can do the math. He's only
40. No, because you were born in 50. That's a nice even number.
Oh, that's an even number. Okay. So pretend you were born in 55. How old would you be this year?
And then subtract 11.
Or add one.
Or you got a computer there. You can pull up a calculator. Yeah.
I actually have a spreadsheet that tracks how old we all are. Yeah, I'll be 47.
No, seriously. You have a spreadsheet that tracks how old we all are?
Yeah. I will open it up now. Fuck.
You have a spreadsheet that tracks how old we all are. To the minute?
It's 16, 17-digit precision. Well, just by the day. I don't know the actual hour.
TMI.
Wow. Wow and wow and
he's
wow.
He's got too much time on his hands.
You really are the uber geek of the group.
Yes.
I will have to say that.
Between you and I combined.
We're not even half of him.
And we talked about this on September 11th, 2010, last time I opened this file. All right, now I have to recalculate to get my now up. So, Dave is 62.9721 years old. Nick is 61.0008 years old. I'm 46.9748.
So, you'll be 47.
I'll be 47. Rob is 31.6264.
Rob is a puppy.
So, altogether, we are 202 years old, which is 73,990 days.
Wow.
Hours, minutes, and seconds.
Wow.
So, Nick, you are 1,925,039,883 seconds old.
Very exciting for me. All right, we're going to take a break while we all beat Steve with something. Dude. I don't know what. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, which is 7. Zillion nanoseconds, with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Apple is rolling out an OS 10 patch, finally, to deal with the DigiNotar threat. DigiNotar will be removed from the list of trusted root certificates. Apple announced the patch in a security update bulletin. Fraudulent certificates were issued by multiple certificate authorities operated by DigiNotar. And what that means is when you go to a website that has HTTPS, some sort of secure protocol, you are sent back a certificate, which is then matched against a list of those certificates that you generally have on your computer. And that tells you you've gone to a real authority somewhere. The people who issued that are a real company and you're at a real place. So a bunch of people spoofed the folks at DigiNotar and got a bunch of legitimate certificates to put onto bogus servers, including a couple of different ones. So most other operating systems have already been patched. OS X will be patched very shortly. This issue will be addressed by simply removing DigiNotar from the list of trusted root certificates, from the list of extended validation certificate authorities, and by configuring default system trust settings so that DigiNotar certificates issued by, including those issued by other authorities, are not trusted. The patch is available for Mac OS X, Mac OS X Server, OS X Lion, and Lion Server. Why isn't it Mac OS X Lion Server?
That's redundant.
Apple's patch follows the revoking of DigiNotar as a trusted SSL secure socket layer certificate provider by Microsoft and Google, who did it last Monday, and browser makers Google and Mozilla, who did it even earlier in the month. For the protection of our customers, Apple, so if you went there with a Chrome or Firefox browser, Firefox browser, you actually were protected much earlier in the month than even Microsoft did it. So, and Apple is catching up this week.
It's been released for 10.7 and 10.6, but nothing earlier.
Right. For the protection of our customers, Apple doesn't disclose, confirm, yada, 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 yada. It is disturbing that Apple does not communicate about security procedures. According to Roel Schoenberg, some security researcher is Kaspersky. Apple keeps users in the dark until there's a patch available. That's really old-fashioned, says Schoenberg. Apple is certainly very late with the security update, he said. We also don't know what is going on with iOS. It is still unclear whether Apple will revoke certificates on the iPad or the iPhone. The same goes for Google's Android, and Schoenberg calls this very strange. He points out that smartphones are basically computers, and that most companies use these phones to handle corporate email. If they're not releasing updates for mobile phones, then that should certainly be substantiated. Google and Apple did not immediately make a comment. How do you feel about Apple holding off this important security fix? Give us your thoughts. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. You know, we rely on these certificates to keep us safe on the Internet. This is how browsers work. When you go somewhere and, you know, many browsers now have a green bar at the top that or at the bottom that tells you, yeah, this is a legit site, and they turn red if it's not. That's how they know.
Yep.
And for the operating system to not be putting those out is very, very bad. Apple has been notoriously bad at doing that, and I'd hate to think, but it appears Google is the same with Android. I have not seen an update for my phone. Excuse me for that, but my
last update really messed mine up.
Did it?
Yeah, well, I downloaded it, got the latest version, and wiped out a lot of my stuff. I had, luckily, you know, like I say, the Gmail and everything else, my contacts, I had that all backed up. But some of the other programs in that I had set up were, oh, gone, like Angry Birds, had to start all over again.
Really?
Whereas Dan did the same update, and his went through fine.
Yeah.
So, who knows? You know, it's just one of the things. It's, you know, if anything go wrong, it'll go wrong for me. Everybody else, piece of cake. I just have that magic touch. What can you say?
Just lucky, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But so, yeah, we do, you know, we talk about how to protect yourself on the Internet, but there are just some things you cannot do. The reality really is that there are at least some cases in which you have to rely on the operating system to keep you safe. And I'm surprised that Google fixed their browser a month and a half ago and has not fixed Android. I don't know that that's actually true. That's what this report says. I hate to think it's true, but it probably is. And I really hate to think that Apple hasn't done anything for the iPhone or the iPad, and that they're so late to their their desktop
operating
systems.
It's a little hard
to
believe.
That's the sort of thing that you fix immediately. The minute the report came out, I was getting updates for my Linux machines,
mm-hmm.
And it really should have been the same from Microsoft and from Apple and from Google. And to wait this long, really, it bothers me. It really does. I don't think it's good.
Yeah, it's
the chain of trust that you go to your bank and it's encrypted and it turns green because your browser trusts that the certificate it got from the bank means this is really your bank. With people generating fake certificates, they can claim to be PayPal, they can claim to be a bank, and your browser will say, yep, you are, and you won't know any better. So these certificates, there were manual instructions on how to remove certificates before the OS patches came out. But
most folks don't take the time to
right.
TFM.
The average person wouldn't be able to do that.
Right.
Yeah, they just look at all that typing, and it's like, no, I don't want to take the time to read through all this. They don't, and you know, sometimes folks will sign up for stuff and don't even realize it.
Yep, and it goes right back to click madness.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, we all
click
do
happy.
It. Yep, people get click happy because, you know, we've said this before. Microsoft teaches us to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
You sure you want to do? You want to do this? Yes. You sure you want to do this? Yes. You really sure you want to do this? Yes.
Yeah, they more or less ingrained it on so many folks, and then
here's my list. And one of the continual problems has been that your computer trusts about 200 different certificate authorities as being a valid authority that can pass out certificates. And one of the typical examples has always been the Hong Kong Post Office. Hong Kong Post Office can issue certificates for security. Why would they need to?
Yeah, right.
So if you get a certificate that says the Hong Kong Post Office trusts them, your computer will trust it.
Hmm.
And I haven't applied that patch to my Mac yet, and I just found my certificate list. And what was the company that... DigiNotar, right?
DigiNotar. Yeah. It's in there, isn't it?
It's still in there, yeah. So I haven't applied the patch yet. I saw the download yesterday and didn't want to change anything until after the show.
No, I thought it's
really
a bad thing.
Oh, yeah. No guts, no glory?
I should be able to just go in here and delete it.
He should.
Yes, you could. Yes, you could. It would probably be safer to let the patch do it for you.
Yeah.
Rather than doing it by hand. And but it, what the heck? Go Commando. Oh, yeah. Why not?
And this where's was, your sense of adventure?
This was from a Dutch company, so it's most likely Dutch websites that are potentially compromised. But it could be...
No,
could be
and anyone. In point of fact, that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, because you could have... You could
get a certificate
from
for
this
anybody.
Dutch company, yeah.
So, yeah, it's... I can't say enough about this sort of thing. I'm teaching a course in security right
never
now.
Never trust. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Never trust. I've been teaching a course in security, and one of the things that I'm trying to install into their heads is a new mindset.
Oh, I got to show you this website.
Something I call paranoia. Never trust. Never when it comes to security. Never trust. And that's. That's exactly the sort of thing that my students and I will be talking about on Monday night. We'll be looking at this DigiNotar business and how easy it was for them to get their – they essentially just called up and said, hi, I'm from Apple. Send me a cert. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I think this kind of semi-destroys DigiNotar's business. You know, it really does. I mean, nobody's going to trust them now.
Heck no.
Although it's happened to all of them. VeriSign has done it. All of them have done it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you get somebody new in there, you know, and they really don't know or don't think about it.
See, when we got a certificate at my company for our shopping site, the idea is that you submit all these forms and they call you and verify that that's really you.
Mm-hmm.
And they do background checks. And now there's the new extended certificates. Which is costs even more,
right?
But this company is supposed to verify that you are who you say you are.
Yeah, but yeah, well, sure.
Yeah, that and 25 cents might get you a cup of coffee if the cup comes down straight.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Mine usually tips to the side.
We have yeah.
Well, there's been a collection of websites that. Have been popping up recently. Has Sony been hacked this week? Tells you yes or no. You know, has my email address been compromised? Yes or no. A new one came out. Is your credit card stolen? And I love this logo. It says it's verified secure. Is my credit card stolen.com? And you type in your credit card number and your expiration date and the name on it, and you click the check button.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what's it called?
Is my credit card stolen?
Nice. Now, that's really, really nice.
Fortunately, these are good guys, the anti-phishing work group. But it pops back and says, this is a test. You have failed. Because if you had, if these were bad guys, you typed in your credit card number, you typed in your expiration date, now anyone can use your credit card.
Yeah, you're hosed.
And they're
yeah,
preying
not
on...
For, not for nothing. But they seem to be out of Georgetown, Grand Cayman Islands.
Oh, yeah?
Maybe I wouldn't necessarily trust these people.
Mm. Yeah, the domain registration. Well, and that's the point. It looks easy, and people want to know if their credit card has been stolen or not. So bad guys are very easy to have phishing attacks because of that.
Yeah, it's really nuts. People are... way too trusting on the internet, and we've been saying that for a very long time.
There's the level of anonymity that you think you have with a computer.
And you don't. You have no anonymity on the internet. I was talking to my students about that, and of course a dozen of them raised their hands and wanted to talk about various anonymizers on the internet. And I reminded them that at some point, in order to deliver something to your machine, they have to know your address. You can't get a package unless somebody knows your home address. You can't get a packet unless somebody knows your computer address.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the anonymizers in the world, whatever they tell you on their websites, if the government, if their local government comes to them with a warrant and says, you must show us your logs, they must show them their logs.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have logs, they will go to jail. And I asked my students, which of you believes that any one of these completely unknown companies, you don't know who runs them, you don't know where they are, you don't know anything about them, how many of those companies are going to go to jail to protect you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was a big issue middle of June. The FBI raided a hosting company because they had a warrant for a specific company that was apparently allegedly doing bad things. So they raided this hosting company. They yep. walked into this hosting company, and it's full of racks of computers. They didn't know which one it was, so they took them all.
Yep.
Including Instapaper and Posterous and some very well-known, you know, well-trafficked servers. They apparently didn't know which one to take. The hosting company didn't know which one to take. And so they took them all. And what really made a lot of people mad is that the other companies using this hosting farm weren't told what happened. Just their servers disappeared from the internet. Someone basically went in and turned it off and took the server away.
Oh, good.
And it was in a Virginia data center. So that, you know, they basically took hundreds of companies off the internet, or at least, you know, had to go to backup servers. And it was a real big mess because they didn't have all the information they needed.
Well, and they had all the information they needed. It's somewhere in that building. Go take the building away.
Right. And you see that on TV all the time. You know, they'll raid a house. They take everything. Doesn't matter if it's related to the case or not. They don't know if it's related to the case or not. We'll just take everything and figure it out later.
Yep.
That happened many years ago to the Williams family, Roberta and Steve Williams, who published a lot of the games yep. back in the Apple II day. They had all their stuff taken because actually there was a photo. I think it was Leisure Suit Larry. They had a photo of everybody in the hot tub, and somebody claimed they could see more than was decent.
Yeah.
In one of the people, actually in Roberta Williams herself, in the hot tub. So for pornography, they went in and raided and took everything they had. Everything. And it turns out, of course, that actually happened to them twice. The second time was for something else. I forget what it was.
It was a game about hacking. You were trying to break into a computer.
Yes, that was the second one. You're right. That was the second one. And so those... Oh, that's very nice.
He found it. The jazz version of Near My God to Thee.
No, this is called no. An Older Man is Like an Elegant Wine.
That's exactly right.
Since we've been talking about age.
That's right. We're going to pour ourselves a glass of old age, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. A man is at his greatest when he's gray and loud. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. A software upgrade that went wrong caused parts of the Google Docs cloud-hosted Office productivity suite to go offline for an hour on Wednesday, a situation the company is taking steps to prevent. The outage made word processing, document lists, documents, drawings, and app scripts unavailable to most doc users, including people who use the software for work. Apparently, presentations and spreadsheets were not affected. Changes made to improve real-time collaboration capabilities in the suite triggered an unexpected memory management bug, which in turn tripped the system. Since resolution, we've been assembling and scrutinizing the timeline of this event and have assembled a list of steps, which will both reduce the chance of a future event, decrease the time required to notice and resolve a problem, and limit the scope which any single problem can affect, wrote Alan Warren, a Google engineering director, in a blog post on Friday. Google provided more details about the outage in a formal report that it posted on its App Status web dashboard, which is a website that lists the performance status of the applications in the cloud-based Google Apps Collaboration and Communications Suite. Docs is a standalone productivity suite that is also part of Apps. We apologize for the inconvenience and frustration which the outage caused, Warren wrote. Google has high expectations for apps adoption in large companies, and in recent years has been adding features that enterprise IT departments require. Widespread outages like Wednesday's obviously don't help in convincing CIOs to consider apps. However, app's main competitor, Microsoft's Office 365 and its successor, Microsoft Business Productivity Online Suite, have had a number of serious outages in the past 9 months. So, were you inconvenienced by the Google Docs outage? Give us your thoughts. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Judy did from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Judy. What's your question?
Hey, help.
What happened?
I'm at my computer. I'm trying to put on a new printer, and it's bucking me. So, and I got the little software disk in the thing, so it's ready to go.
Yeah?
I must have to do things in order, and it's not taking it. So it's that add a print wizard, and the wizard is unable to detect any plug-and-play printers. So that's out.
You have to run the install off the disk first.
What OS are you running first?
XP.
Okay.
XP Home.
And are the drivers written for XP?
Yeah.
Well, I assume so. I can get on the computer.
You got to look on the printer.
You have to look on the printer box and see if XP is a supported operating system.
All right.
It probably is.
Yeah.
But we're seeing a lot of the new printers are doing 7 and Vista.
Okay, let's kind of.
Yeah, but
I got to install printer software.
Right, you
then
install
you
the printer
manufacturer, which I did.
Yeah, and then that install loads the drivers, and then
the printer isn't listed.
Then it's the wrong disk.
Yeah, they've given you the wrong disk.
I just got it in the mail.
Oh, okay, but they've sent you clearly. If the printer is there, does the printer have a number or a name?
A number and a name.
Okay, and when you look at that list, what is the printer number?
C310.
All right. Does the driver say C300 family?
I don't know. I have to take it out and see. Let me see.
Well, on the list you're looking at on the screen.
Oh. Okay.
This is the HP PhotoSmart?
This is ESP C310. Yes, I guess so. I'm not too savvy with some of that. This isn't working. What's going on here? Well.
Well, there's the Kodak ESP C310.
That's the one.
Okay. You may be better off going to the Kodak website and downloading the driver
directly from there.
It's frozen. Son of a gun.
Yeah, I would just go to the website for Kodak and download it.
Here's what you want to do.
Directly.
Reboot the machine. Make sure that CD pops out during the reboot process. Take it out so it doesn't run. Then go to the Kodak website. Steve is looking for the driver now.
Yeah, just hold on a minute here.
Yeah, and download the driver directly and follow their directions to install it.
Let's see. This thing says all-in-one printer software for Windows and Mac.
You need
operating system.
Right. According to the Kodak website, you need XP Home with Service Pack 2 or better.
I have 2. Well, maybe I even have 3.
Yeah.
So now I'm at the thing to get onto the Internet. Should I get on there?
I don't know what the thing to get on the Internet is.
Huh?
What
see your screen.
What is the thing to get on the Internet?
I have to click my name.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Go?
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, you want to go to Kodak.com and download the driver for that printer.
I see.
And install it from there.
Sometimes those printer installation disks will check on the Internet themselves for an updated driver.
Ah, because this says all-in-one printer software, so I assumed it was current.
That's a dangerous assumption.
Yeah.
That CD could have been.
I see that.
Yep.
Okay, so.
Give that a shot and let us know.
Yeah, go to the website, find the ESP C310.
Search.
Make sure you've got the exact right printer. Make sure you're downloading the version for your operating system.
Okay.
Install it from there.
Uh-huh.
And also, the Kodak printer should have come with a quick install sheet.
It did.
Okay, and that should
tell
you.
That's what I'm using.
Right, and that should tell you what order to do things in.
Right.
Install the CD first.
I got that.
Yeah. Right.
A lot of times the printers will have a little piece of tape over the USB port saying install the disk first. then plug the printer in.
Yeah.
I don't know. Number 7 says choose connection type.
Well, you have to.
I think I did that already, and that's a little screen that's right on the printer. You do that with.
You have to get the driver installed first.
Yes.
And so.
Right, you got to do things
driver,
in order.
Huh?
Yeah, if that disk doesn't list your printer on it, it's the wrong disk, and you can download the driver directly from Kodak.
Or it's the C300 family.
Yeah, it may say 300 series or 300 family.
What about that? Do I do?
Of which the 310 is part of.
Oh, and I click that?
Oh, great. The installer is named AIO_install.
Great.
All
thanks,
in one install.
Guys. I'm like a little kid in a high school here.
Right. But that quick install sheet should give you most of the information you need.
And
Most of the Kodak stuff I've seen is pretty good.
Yeah, and you can't skip a step. That's the big thing. If something isn't working on a step, you have to get that step working first before you can move on to the next one.
Well, everything else is go. The green lights are on, and everything shows up like it's supposed to.
But, yeah, you shouldn't plug the printer in until you get the driver installed.
I shouldn't do what?
Do not plug the printer into the computer until you have the driver installed.
Oh, really? That's a big thing because that's not what I did.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, so I got to unplug the printer.
You have to load the driver before the computer knows about the printer.
I'm so glad you guys are there. I mean, what would I do all weekend without a printer?
Well, exactly, and now you know.
I know. Well, my husband goes, I don't need a printer. I said, well, I use it all the time, thank you. All right, I'll try it that way.
Take it easy.
Right. Take a look at that sheet.
I am looking at it.
And follow it exactly.
I did.
Okay. Excellent.
Go to Kodak.go/downloads and follow the online instructions.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you, folks.
All right, good luck.
Goodbye.
That's one of the things that we often miss out on is those little sheets come. And we set them aside thinking they're yet another one of those, you know, make sure you don't drop this in the water before you plug it in.
Yeah.
But in fact, there's something much more important than that. And so when you get one of those quick install sheets, you need to go for it. All right. We've got pretty much time for a call from Joe from Buffalo. Hiya, Joe. What do you know?
Hi. Well, I know Google Plus is pretty neat, but I'm a little confused about how circles are supposed to work, and I was wondering if you could tell me about your experiences. It seems that they're touting it like a permission system, like groups of people, but isn't there sort of an aspect of a distribution list?
Well, yes. Here's the deal. In Google Plus, you put people into circles. You can have as many circles as you want, call them anything they want. Nobody else ever sees the name. Then down on the left-hand side of your main screen, you'll see those circles listed. So you can click on that circle and only see stuff from the people in that circle. When you send something out, instead of sending it out to public, you can send it out to a specific circle. So, for example, I have a circle for Rochesterians. I have a circle for technicians. I have a circle for family. So if I want to send something only to my family that no one else will see, I take out public and put in family, and then whatever I send to them goes to them, and nobody else sees it. And that's the way circles...
See, I don't mind people seeing stuff that I send to public, but that means I blast it out to everybody then, huh?
Yes. Anybody can see a public stream, but if you send it to a different circle, then only the people you have put in those circles will see that. Got it?
Okie dokie. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe. We're done for another week. We want to thank all of you. I want to thank everybody who sent me birthday greetings. I very much appreciate it. We're done for another week. I apologize for the tickle in my throat. We'll be back. Oh, man. We'll be back next week, so please tune in again for Dave Enright, for Steve Ray. George is coming up next. I cannot imagine why you would even want to touch that dial, because he's going
to
do some great music for you.
And I
we're
get to stay here for another 2.5 hours.
And you'll still have Dave with you here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.